You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council.
And I'm Emily Stearns, Health, Welfare, and Regulatory Affairs Liaison for the American Horse Council.
And you are listening to our special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August of 2025, the hottest, I think, month of the year.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
Hey, beginning in 2025, the American Horse Council Foundation offered 5 future leader professional development scholarships to cover the cost of conference registration for agriculture and equine college students wishing to attend our conference in Washington, D.C. Coming to Washington, D.C. is no small expense, so this was a big deal for us to kind of bring a little way to make this happen. Since becoming president at the American Horse Council, one of my personal goals has been to recruit and engage young professionals into the equine industry. When I speak to numerous universities and young adult organizations, the one thing I hear repeatedly is that they want to know what career options they have and what is available and how to navigate the industry to get opportunities for the roles that they really desire.
And to reiterate, the goal is to help students understand what opportunities exist in addition to the traditional barn owning and other kind of hands-on horse careers that we all have in mind when we think of horsey jobs.
Yes, and the American Horse Council Foundation trustees and I are so excited to offer these scholarships to expose students to the industry leaders and offer educational content on a wide range of topics to help them get started on their career path.
And I mean, I won't say it came to us as a surprise because this was an exciting opportunity, but we had 10 applicants for the first round and we really struggled with choosing just 5 because they all seemed very worthy.
I have to say the staff and I really deliberated a lot to try to choose the ones that we thought were really going to work. It was really tough, but we feel really strongly that this is part of the American Horse Council's ongoing dedication to workforce development and fostering inclusivity within the equine community, which fits perfectly with our youth engagement and inclusion task force objectives.
And again, kind of just to confirm, this was essentially a pilot or a trial of these scholarships. So Julie, is AHC considering offering them again next year?
Oh, absolutely. This was such a resounding success that we had such great feedback, not only from the industry executives that attended the conference, but we had great remarks from the young scholarship winners who were attending, that you can definitely count that we're going to continue to do this. We're so excited they were able to attend. I think they made great contacts and networks, but we'll let them talk about that when we do the interview process. But before we get there, I have to do a quick jump to a commercial because we have some sponsors for today's episode. Markel Insurance is proudly served the equine community for over 50 years, providing insurance for horses and horse-related businesses. While your focus might be on your horses, let Markel protect you and your horses. Contact Markel today for an insurance solution for your horse, farm, or equine business needs. Visit MarkelHorseAndFarm.com or call 800-842-5017 to obtain a quick and easy quote from their knowledgeable team. It's your investment, but trust Markel to protect it. Emily, now that we've teed up this topic for the month, let's meet our guest. So first, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your career plan. So I'm going to start with Aditri.
Hi, my name is Aditri. I was one of the scholarship recipients, and I had a wonderful time at the conference. I am going to be a junior in undergrad at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey. I'm studying animal science on a pre-veterinary track with a minor in English, and I hope to go to get my master's for animal welfare and then go to vet school after that and focus on equine sports med and orthopedics with an emphasis in broader equine welfare initiatives.
Wow, you've got some big goals there, girl.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so before I butcher your name, to introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Najee Ackland. I'm another one of the scholarship recipients from this past year's conference. Currently a senior at University of Kentucky, studying equine science and management, minoring in animal science, and doing an undergrad certificate in business. I'm currently working towards attending veterinary school upon graduation in December and get my doctorate in veterinary medicine. My goal is to make a meaningful impact in the equine industry, but also served as a commissioned veterinarian in the U.S. Army Veterinary Corps. Passionate about combining my love for animals and horses with service and leadership, and I hope that my experience to make both an impact on the community and beyond.
I was so excited when we got your application because especially with all the work we've been doing with the Caisson platoon, the Army needs good horse vets. So I was really excited to see your application. So we'll start with you again. What attracted you to apply for the scholarship?
So what drew me to the scholarship was it was coincidentally a couple of weeks before that our school had our department in our college took a small group of students to our state capital, which is Frankfort here in Kentucky. And we attended Keep Day, which is the Kentucky Equine Education Project. And it was a very eye-opening experience where we got to connect with a lot of industry leaders, participants, and legislators to learn about the vital role that the equine industry plays in the communities across the state. So when I came across the scholarship, it felt like a sign. It wasn't just a scholarship or an opportunity. It was a chance to grow professionally and gain a deeper insight to the industry that I'm deeply passionate about.
Did you get to mingle with the Caisson platoon folks?
Oh, yes. I got some good contacts. I've been in contact with them since after the conference. So very excited for what the mentoring they're offering me, but also the lane they're giving to me to, you know, attend veterinary school, hopefully under the Army.
I have to say, when we introduced you to the audience at the conference, one of the veterinarians that was there was like, woohoo, he was so excited that this is what your passion is. So it was great that you made those contacts. So Aditri, tell us a little bit about what attracted you to the scholarship opportunity.
Yeah, I have a professor and mentor at school who is always looking out for me. And she saw your Facebook post, I believe, and she sent it my way and she said, you should apply for this. And when your professor says to do something, you do it. and I sort of started by looking at the application. And though it was sent to me and I didn't necessarily find it myself, I was like, oh, wow, like I absolutely need to be here. And I believe I already knew I was coming to DC for the summer for internship. So I was like, this would be perfect. And it would be such a great way to explore the industry. I didn't necessarily grow up with a horse background. So my favorite part of being in college is seeing the different aspects to it. And sometimes you can't do that till you're just in a room with so many people who come from so many backgrounds and so many disciplines. So that's sort of what attracted me to apply. And I was proven right. There was so many people and things I learned about the horse industry in just those couple of days.
And I'll start with the Aditri first. What were the highlights of attending the event for you? What did you kind of walk away with that you thought was a really great little gold nugget that was really something you wanted to take forward in your career?
Yeah. Oh, well, there's a picture of me that I took after the conference where I'm holding up like a stack of business cards, like dollar bills, because I just met so many contacts and I learned how willing people were to help. I feel like you never know with some conferences. Sometimes older people are a little like, oh, we don't like take you seriously. But everybody was so nice and genuinely interested in everything we had to say. I will say my little golden nugget, Jen Grant from SOTUS.
She's lovely. She's great.
Lovely. We hit it off super well. And she went above and beyond out of her way to reach out to BW Furlong in New Jersey, where I also externed sometimes, like, you know, for the last couple of years since I've been in school, and told them that it was great meeting me. So that was a wonderful connection to have, like, you know, an old boss be like, hey, we heard you did great things. Proud of you. So that's always a good motivator. And through the last day of the conference and some of these smaller group activities, I got to interact a lot with the AAP people, which was super nice because I managed to weasel my way in to go to their conference in Colorado in December, which is so exciting.
That's a big deal. That's great.
That was a big deal for me.
That was a big deal.
you bet. I called my mom on the way home, like freaking out. So and Colorado is sort of where I want to do my master's and hopefully end up at some point in my life. So I'm super excited about that, and I would not have been able to connect one-on-one if it wasn't for the conference.
So if you need some more contacts, I've got some great people who are at the University of Colorado who will be super, super mentors for you.
Yes, 100%.
Okay, so going to the other side of the coin, tell us about your experience at the conference, and what are the highlights for you? What were the big golden nuggets for you?
So my experience at the conference was, again, amazing. I think one of my big moments was meeting Dr. McLean. She was from UC Davis. She gave us our presentation on the mules and the donkeys, and she saw what school I went to, and she actually knows one of my professors. So that was like one of the first people that I like talked to at the conference, and just kind of like brought down the sense of nervousness with me. I'm like, oh, okay, somebody I know through connected with somebody else kind of made me a little bit more comfortable.
I can relate to there a little bit.
Yeah. So definitely connecting with her, because then again, like I said, I'm going to that conference here next week, actually. And she teaches at UC Davis, so I might be meeting with her to get some lunch or something like that. So very excited for that. But again, another one of the biggest things is meeting the veterinarians in the Army. I've been trying for years to get in contact with just more people who have experience in the industry, and you know, putting that in with the Army as well. So how like overwhelming it was when they all came up to me and were giving me their contacts, and they're like, we got to get you to vet school, we need to invest in you. And it was just a very like surreal moment, and it was just very heartwarming that I like had to like take a moment and like step away, and I'm like, I had to call somebody because I'm just like, it's a lot.
That is so funny. I love that. So the interesting part is everybody in the space admits we have a shortage of veterinarians. I think those guys, and I should say gals from the Caisson Platoon, were like, somebody wants to be part of our family. They were so excited about that. I mean, the chief veterinarian that I met, he just could not say more about how excited he was that this is what you wanted to go do. He was just pumped about the whole thing.
Yes. And even though both of the lieutenant colonels are retiring, they're both like, we still have a foot in here. Like, you let us know what you need. We're getting it done.
Yep. That I heard that clearly from both of them. Like, we're on this. We got it. Mm-hmm.
So what's something, we'll keep going then. What's something, you know, that you've struggled with as a young professional entering the industry? You just said you've been trying to make contacts. What's some other things you've struggled with?
I think one of the biggest things I struggle with is just coming from Virginia, but I came from an area where it just wasn't like very deep in the equine industry. I'm driving 45 minutes to Yorktown or Smithfield, you know, to get my lessons in to work with horses. So moving from Virginia to Kentucky was a big move for me, but I know that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get more insights in the industry and just grow more professionally and personally before I enter vet school. So I think one of the biggest things that I struggle with is a little bit of imposter syndrome. Also coming from like my not.
Oh, yeah. That's sad. I'm sorry.
I know. It's okay. It's just like coming from a minority background, just entering the space where everybody like is so knowledgeable and like accomplished already. It gives me like some shoes to fill, but which isn't bad, because I like a challenge and I like putting in myself in spaces where, you know, it's not always comfortable, because that's how you grow. So being able to be here, and Kentucky is a wonderful state and has so many, especially veterinarians, so many wonderful veterinarians and people in the industry who are very open to teaching everybody and just like come learn. So the opportunities that I've been doing out here, like not even just centered on veterinary medicine, just equine health and welfare, have just been invaluable.
I was just gonna justify your experience and say, like, not only on top of, you know, your experience as a minority in the industry, but also, it's, if you're not born a horse person,
We are so good at excluding you if you come into the horse world at 18, 19, 25, whatever. It's for some reason, it's like if you're not a native horse person, you're not a horse person. And it's that's something we all kind of agree we need to work on and be better about, I think.
So you and I are going down the same path because we have really tried at the American Horse Council to emphasize inclusivity. I mean, good grief. We want to grow the industry. We need to be more open to having all kinds of people involved. And it's just amazing to me. So don't disconnect with me after this interview, because I've got a great veterinarian who lives in Lexington. She's lovely. I'll introduce you to her. There's a number of other people, but it always amazes me how many people, when I go to the National Collegiate Horsemen's Association, how many students are there that are trying to find that little pathway, that little avenue, because they didn't grow up in the horse industry. So it's a little difficult to navigate.
Aditri, what have you struggled with?
Yeah, honestly, you guys hit all my main points of struggle too. It's, you know, hard being a minority. I didn't grow up with horses. My parents didn't really have horse background. It was always just something I'm interested. But I think, like you mentioned, it's nice to fill shoes. And I think it gives you a unique perspective. Not every horse person, but if you grow up in the saddle and you're born and doing that, you probably think the way you've always done is the best and right way. So it's kind of nice to come in and see different ways people are doing things and be able to offer like, hey, like I've seen it done this way. Would you ever be willing to try that? And I think another struggle I have is sometimes just imposter syndrome. It's always hard to be like, you know, sometimes the youngest person in a room and everyone around me is so full of knowledge and they know exactly what they're doing. And I'm sitting there like, how did I even get to be in this room? And like counting my stars that like something I did let me, you know, even just sit in into some of the committee meetings. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they let me like sit on an actual chair and not the floor. So that's always hard. But I try to fake it till I make it. Just because I'm freaking out inside doesn't mean everyone needs to know that. So
if it's any consolation, ladies, so I didn't grow up in the horse industry. I grew up on a barrier island off the coast of North Carolina. Not a lot of horses there. But I had a cousin who had horses, and that's how I sort of got into horses. But I didn't really become a part of the horse community till I was, I don't know, in college, you know, kind of thing. So late in life. And I totally felt that whole imposter syndrome. I totally felt that glass ceiling, like they only accept people who have grown up in this space, and it's really difficult to make your way. But you can do it. I promise. It's possible. It is possible. What do you think the industry could do better to help support young professionals? Because that's what I am really, really passionate about, is I want to create new professionals. I want to create new leaders in the industry. And sorry, listeners, but I struggle a lot with looking at how old the leadership is and all the breeds. Emily's kind of smiling and nodding at me for listeners that can't see this video. That we're getting to that stage where we're all at the same age. And I'm afraid we're going to end up with this big gap in who's going to fill these roles. So tell me, I'll start with Aditri. We'll go backwards this time. What do you think the industry could do to better support young professionals? Because we got to create a pipeline here.
Yeah, that's the question we're all asking. I think scholarships like this are great. The horse industry can be sometimes expensive. Not everybody can afford to own a horse or travel to scholarship or conferences like this. But having scholarships makes it more accessible, which I just think opens it up to more people. Especially when you're younger, you're probably using more of your parents' money, or you're working a part-time job and you don't have like the ability to, you know, do everything you want yet in life. And I just think we've mentioned a couple of times being open-minded. It's so nice to hear that like the vets and the other people attending the conference were willing to talk to us and just giving us a space. I think that itself can be a barrier at times. You might be in the room, but maybe nobody's really paying attention to you. And that can come from both sides, where we encourage the older generation to be more open to the younger generation and teach the younger generation to stand up for themselves and learn how to actually speak and address a room full of people, which can be hard to do. Like, we had a year of school online with COVID and we're always glued to our screens. So it's definitely a push and pull from both sides, but it's doable and we have to do it.
I'm going
to
get it wrong always because I'm worse at names. Najay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
See, I told you, I'm terrible at this. So what do you think? What do we need to do? Because we really need to include and be more open-minded about how we get young professionals into this industry.
So yeah, just to pick up on what Aditri said, creating more entry points and accessible and inclusivity for everyone. Like, having paid internships, I know paid internships aren't always possible, but it helps for the people who can't really afford to not have an income coming in when they know they want this opportunity, but they have to miss out on it because it might be a student who's, you know, they financially support themselves. And I know I've struggled with that as well. Mentorship programs, these types of scholarships, like I was able to attend this conference not only based off the scholarship that I received from the American Horse Council, but my university offers an applied education fund and they offer funding for that. So just opening opportunities for everyone to kind of have, to kind of, you know, test the waters and kind of get their foot in the pot in a way. And even with, if you don't make a scholarship, I think having a program, even with the American Horse Council, maybe like going, picking a different state a year and having like a mini conference for students, younger, not even just college students, high school students, maybe students in middle school, and just hosting like a little educational event, teaching them more about the industry, different lanes they can go. And having people in their community there present to, you know, voice out what they do with their kind of their lane, whether it's breeding, sports medicine, just regular farm work, rescue, adoption, and just bringing in students, you know, as volunteers, and just, you know, breaking that barrier.
Oh, that's fabulous. So great advice. Great advice. We've got some more work to do, Emily.
Yes, lots of it, I think. For kind of our last little closure, Najay, we'll start with you. What advice would you offer to young professionals that are either interested in this scholarship opportunity or kind of looking for other opportunities within the industry?
Okay, before she answers, let me remind everybody, the American Horse Council offers a big internship program. So we have lots of internships in the spring, the summer, and the fall. I think this year we have 7 interns for the summer. So you can apply for an internship. You can do what Aditri did, and she double applied. She got she got both an internship and a scholarship. So you can do both or either, but it's meant to really, really excite you about the industry, give you lots of different avenues, make contacts. There's lots of different ways to go about it. So, Emily, back to your question.
And the internships are paid and remote. Just putting that out there.
That's right.
I think we hit 25 interns at the end of 2024 for the year by the time we did all 3 seasons.
I think so too.
So, Najay, back to you, kicking it back to you. What advice do you have out there for young professionals trying to get in the industry?
So the advice I would have is to just go for it. Even when you feel like you're not ready, you're not qualified, it's a chance to tell your story, share your goals, and not alone to just exercise yourself in self-reflection. Put yourself out there, no matter how scary it is. Any moment, just because the door closes and says no, does that mean it's the end? There's another door opening right at the other end of the hall, and it might be a better opportunity for you. It might align more better with you. So even if you get a no, and even if you get a yes and you don't like it, take every opportunity as an experience to grow and to learn.
Yeah, I think my advice would be just to get your hands dirty, literally and figuratively. You can learn something anywhere, whether it's barns or farriers, equine rescues, vets, being an intern. And to not be afraid of a bad experience. I think there's sort of this mindset that you have to find the exact perfect role at you and completely excel at it. But even if you don't love what you do, it's temporary internships for the summer, 10 weeks usually. You're still getting paid. You can still do good work. And finding what you don't like to do and what part of the industry you might not want to be a part in can be just as helpful as finding what you are into.
Oh, I totally agree with you that. After my sophomore year in college, I took a summer internship and it totally changed my life. It was one of those experiences where I'm like, oh, I really should have done this as a career. But if I hadn't tried, I would never have known. So I totally get where you're coming from. Emily, you got a wrap up question?
Well, that was my wrap up question.
Yeah, those are wrap up questions. Okay.
I'm not sure what else sage wisdom, like I feel like we've gotten all the sage wisdom there is to provide. You guys have been great.
Yeah. So is there anything you guys want to contribute as we wrap up before we take a break to our next segment?
I would say apply for the internship and go to the conference and experience being around all those wonderful people and, you know, soak it all in.
Cool. Aditri?
Ditto. I am a strong advocate of double dipping. I thought definitely whoever's reading this application is going to judge me and think I'm like desperate for some sort of experience because I'm applying twice. But it was so fun to be like an intern and to be a scholarship recipient. And they both went so great and taught me different things. So yeah, don't be afraid. Just go for it. Go big or go home. And you never know what's going to happen. So
okay, listeners, you're going to hear from the two other scholarship recipients. We're recording them separately today, but you're going to hear from them and we're going to splice it all in. So our producer, Glenn's going to do a great job with that. So you're going to hear four perspectives of their experience at the conference and as scholarship recipients. So we're excited about that. So thank you guys both so much for your application, for being part of the conference, for being part of this. We are so excited. And again, I'm going to offer, if you need help figuring out how to navigate your career in this industry, we're here for you. Just reach out.
This next part is with Caitlin Lundman, who's another scholarship winner. She wasn't able to join the main interview, but we wanted to make sure we got her point of view as well. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoy.
Introduce yourself and tell our audience a little about yourself and your career plans.
Thanks, Julie. So my name is Caitlin Lundman. I am a PhD candidate at the University of Florida, but originally from near the Toronto area in Canada. So I've gone just a little ways now. I have worked with horses since I was about 14 years old, but I always joked that my parents put me on a horse at 6 months old and that we never really looked back. So been there for a while now. My current research is focused on human-horse experiences and how those impact youth development in terms of leadership, social skills, and emotional intelligence. And I'm really passionate about what I'm doing right now. After that, in terms of career, I'm looking forward to hopefully continuing some of this research, whether in an academic or an industry role. I think it's really important that we try to make horse experiences for youth even more accessible and we start to understand what's happening in a lot of those interactions. We've even over the last few years of my journey in graduate school, I think we've had more and more research come out in this field, which is really exciting. A lot of it, I think, is still a little bit program focused. And so I'm really hoping that we start to uncover more of this actual interaction between people and horses and what the heck is happening here on a social level that we kind of know in the industry, but we don't really have a lot of literature on yet. So that's kind of where my niche is and where I hope to go in the future, continuing some science and some program design for youth programs. Yeah.
So Caitlin, what attracted you to apply to our scholarship this year?
Julie mentioned this to me and it was a really awesome opportunity for me. I've worked a little bit with the American Horse Council before. But what I think is really special and important about my work, and maybe this is a bit of a tangent for y'all, but is my work really stemmed out of my work in tourism with horses. And so working with guests who came from all over the world to do carriage rides in Banff. And where I came up with my ideas was talking to folks who were interacting with horses and saying, you know, oh, this is something that's happening and we need to experience. And so it's been really important to me to continue as a scholar connecting with industry and continue to meet people where they're at, and two fronts. So I think the American Horse Council, this was such a beautiful opportunity for me because I was able to connect to share out what I am doing for my research and who a little bit of who I am, but also to hear back from the voices in the industry and some really important people in the industry. What do they need? And if we're going to be scholars in this area, what is useful and what is going to help us with our program design? What's going to help us for the industry? So this was a really amazing opportunity to meet some really, really, really cool people for me that had a lot of really wonderful insight, which is just honestly, it's such a unique experience.
And it's, you know, you say it's a wonderful opportunity to meet us in the industry, but it's also a great opportunity for us to meet the young people in the industry too.
So I'm going to segue to talking a little bit about your experience at the conference. What were the highlights of the event for you? And I have to be honest and say, I think you collected the most business cards of maybe any of our scholarship winners because everybody's intrigued with the field of study that you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that honestly, that was the highlight for me was the reception hour, getting to like talk to people, like interact personally with them. I did collect a lot of business cards, that is correct, which was really nice. And that was definitely my high point of everybody I talked to had such a cool story and had such different experiences, which I think is something that I talk about as well. It's like, I think there's something that's unique going on with horses, but we also do so many different things with horses. So getting to talk to everybody and hear what they're doing and why it's important and why my work could be important to them from a range of perspectives was really, really cool. And it was lovely to have people excited and to have people interested. So that was really wonderful. And that actually continued, I would say, everybody that I met was so lovely, and it actually continued outside of sessions as well, of like, I happened to run into other folks and meet other people even outside of that, which was just amazing. So it was a really wonderful opportunity in that respect.
So tell us, what's something you struggle with as a young professional entering the industry?
I think, as someone who is coming out of a doctoral degree in a very niche area, there's a lot of ambiguity about what exactly my career will be or where my research is going to live, where I'm going to live as a scientist. I'm not a traditional equine scientist, I don't believe. And so I'm a little bit different from that. I'm not really a traditional educator as well. So we're trying to find where this works. It was one of the reasons I really loved this conference, because I think meeting industry professionals, they really understand my work and they understand where it can be beneficial. But I think that is going to be the biggest challenge going forward for me is as I finish up my degree, is finding not just finding a career that's going to be suitable, but finding perhaps some people in an appropriate science field that really understand what we need in the horse industry and understand the value of my work. Like I said, I think the industry does that really well. I think in academia, we're still trying to find our niche a little bit of like what that is. So I think that that is probably the biggest hurdle that I'm facing right now. We talk about this as leadership scholars as well, that sometimes people don't fully understand what we're studying with leadership either. So there's a little bit of having to explain yourself and explain what you do and why you do it and why it's important. And that's usually the biggest thing we face, I think.
I appreciate that academia comment so much. I taught at the university level for almost a decade, and unless you're teaching an extension, the universities don't know where to put you, even if they have an equine program. It's kind of a universal feeling they all have, I think.
Yeah, it absolutely seems to be. And I there is a field that I think is growing in human animal interactions. And I actually went to another conference that was International Society for Anthrozoology, which is human animal interactions as well. And it's growing, but there's not a lot of there's a couple labs, but not a lot of departments that are doing it yet. And they still, it's like, where do they live? They live kind of in the vet colleges, but kind of in like biology. We're not really sure where we belong yet. There's a lot of that. Yeah.
So I'm going to follow up because we're asking you what your challenges are, but what would be really useful is you could tell us what you think the industry could do to better support young professionals. What are some things that the industry should be offering? Because we need to cultivate these young professionals to come into this space.
Yeah, Okay, that is also a great question. I think, I don't know, this is a, I spend too much time in program evaluation and all those types of things. So I'm like, how do we think about this in terms of systems? And I think it would be identifying where we want people, where we want young people to come in is obviously that first piece. And so I think in my own context, that might be that we want research and scholars, right? Like we want more people doing some more social science around horses, animals in general too. But we want more of that, and especially in education. And so how to support that, you know, I think it's exactly what luckily the American Horse Council has started to do for me, of like reaching out and interacting, giving them a voice, giving voice to a lot of these topics, issues. Funding always helps too. If you find, if you can offer scholarships like this, scholarships for students, to do research or to do, any of those pieces for those types of programs, and perhaps it's also marketing to students different opportunities within the field. And I think Julie and I have talked about this at length in other cases too, but you know, as a Canadian, I didn't have any agricultural education opportunities in Canada and Canadian schools. And so even going, oh, okay, there's other programs. And so when we have kids that are interested, not just giving them, oh, you could be a veterinarian, but saying, here's a lot of different career opportunities you could have. And maybe we offer, instead of just offering scholarships to students for veterinary programs, like let's offer scholarships for these other lines of interest as well. So I think bringing up these other fields a little bit more is important, and supporting them in that equine area. And then, like I said, I think the giving a voice back to of like, talk to the people that are doing it, get them, you know, get them platforms to speak and get people interested. And then hire them. Or if you have grant money, you know, as some people are going to come out into these fields and hopefully be researchers. And again, this is context specific for me, but if you're going to be a researcher and scholar, you know, if you really want to see some work like this done, perhaps grant money is beneficial as well, right? Everything that I have done so far has been really basically without funding, which has been really lucky, but we could do some really cool research if people want to invest money into that as well. So that's something that you can do. And as I said, it's, you know, we do have a more traditional equine scientists, but even if you were looking at someone doing things in business and marketing or like different areas of the equine industry, as people want to do it, the more that you can support them that way, the more that we can find career jobs for people in other aspects of the industry too, I think. So hopefully that definitely helps answer that.
Yeah, definitely. So what advice would you offer to young professionals that might be interested in this particular scholarship opportunity?
In the conference scholarship specifically? Okay, well, first things first, always apply. Any opportunity like this, apply. Even if you don't think you fit the criteria, apply. You never know what's going to happen. So like always, always apply. I think any scholarship opportunity, you know, it's a great chance to write not only what you've done that's been successful and like what achievements you have earned and help you get where you want to go, but it's also just a great opportunity to write what you're passionate about and talk about why you would want to do this. Any application, whether it's a job or a scholarship, I think it's really important that you highlight that piece. And so why would this be beneficial to you? Why do you want to be at the American Horse Council? Is it to meet everybody? Is it to learn about all of the latest things in the industry? Because that is another wonderful way that you can come here and do that. So don't be afraid to apply, and don't be afraid to put your passion first in your application.
So I just want to make sure that folks that are listening to the podcast know that as Caitlin proceeds with her current PhD research, she's going to have some new surveys and some new data collection methodologies that we're going to be circulating through our newsletter. So if you're curious to see a little bit more and delve below the hood of her car, so to speak, and understand what she's getting at, you can be part of that and just look for those surveys. Probably, what would you say, Caitlin, the next 6 weeks, month, whatever?
Yeah, I think we're distributing the survey real soon, and then hopefully we'll have the results. Yeah, probably. I'll probably start presenting them in less than 6 months or so. Depends. The faster you respond, if folks hearing this, the faster you respond to the survey, the faster we'll have some results. So
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today, Caitlin. We really appreciate it. And please stay in touch.
Perfect. Thank you all for having me. I really appreciate it.
From world-class equestrian facilities, race courses, exhibition buildings, and entertainment venues, the team at Populus uses its world-renowned expertise to create some of the most recognizable immersive equine and entertainment experiences across the globe, from Churchill Downs to the new Belmont Park and the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo to the Calgary Stampede. Populus specializes in planning, designing, and developing the world's foremost equestrian and livestock venues. Learn more by visiting populus.com. For the legislative and regulatory report this month, there are several items happening at the federal level. However, they all need some time to sort of marinate before we fully know how they'll impact the horse industry. So instead, we thought we'd dive into two welfare-related pilot studies that we just recently published at the American Horse Council.
And these two studies have been a labor of love the past 6 months that included multiple talented students from our internship program.
And you heard us talk about our internship program before, so we won't go into any detail about that, but they are indispensable. I can't repeat that enough. When it came to the legwork of contacting organizations for these projects.
And there was a lot of organizations to contact. So the first pilot study we published was called the Association Welfare Impact Report. And this report canvassed over 135 discipline and breed associations across the country. And the goal was to understand what opportunities and programs they had to support their members when it came to promoting and improving equine welfare. And about half of those organizations responded to our calls.
And the great news is that our respondents, over 80%, offered at least one type of program that they were providing. This included education, training resources for appropriate husbandry practices, financial aid, grants for owners in need, managing welfare committees to support and monitor safe and appropriate rulemaking, and providing disaster services.
And the overall conclusion was that while the majority of associations are doing something, we can all be doing more. And this is something, for example, only 23% of organizations have a welfare committee. And starting a welfare committee, you know, it doesn't require funds, and it would go a long way to helping organizations identify how they could be improving the welfare of horses registered to their members, either at home or in competition, and really kind of sets a standard for the public as well and lets them know that you're looking out for the horses in your care.
I think it's so important that we are proactive as an organization and as an industry. So exactly what you said, Emily, oversight and transparency, especially when coming from people that know the breed and discipline best, can go a long way. Overall, we see the pilot study as a call to action for associations to step up their game and look forward to investigating further how the industry associations can help each other. There's no need to reinvent the wheel to stand up for your own programs if another association is doing something very successfully. Even if our sports and breeds are all very different, we can really learn from each other. And our conference this year was all about collaboration. So this reiterates the point that we can all work together and we don't have to reinvent anything.
Yes, definitely. So the second pilot study was called the Equine Industry Euthanasia and Disposal Costs. And this report, I must admit, has been a passion project of myself and the United Horse Coalition operations manager, Ashley Harkins, for years. It's something we've wanted to look into. So ever since we started in rescue nearly 15 years ago, we had a hunch that the cost and accessibility of euthanasia and aftercare of the body once the horse was euthanized were huge factors impacting the welfare of horses. So this year, we finally had the bandwidth, thanks to interns, to dive into it for the pilot study.
And I have to be honest, guys, and say this took a lot of people, multiple staff, multiple interns, lots of research to make this happen.
Yes, they contacted over 400 veterinarians and disposal companies across the country to get cost estimates for services. It took I think we spent 6 months on them alone. We have data for every state and region, and we found that with the exception of Region 5, which is Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, every region had an average cost of euthanasia services under $500. Region 5 does have providers that offer euthanasia for under $500, but the average cost was closer to $600. For disposal, all regions and states had at least one option that was under $500 as well. Region 1, which is New England, had the most expensive kind of low average of $600, which was for burial. But even still, there were still options in those states for under $500. And in one state, we found burial services for as low as $37 at a public drop-off out in the Midwest.
So I know, guys, I'm so sorry. This sounds like a really morbid kind of conversation. But at some point, horse owners have to make that uncomfortable decision about the age of their horse, the health of the horse, and about euthanizing the horse. And then you have to deal with the disposal challenges. So we use the word affordable in our report. Please don't take that the wrong way. That's come back with a little pushback when we put it out on Facebook, that affordable is somewhat subjective. But for us in this pilot study, the conclusion is that there are affordable options. And however, not every type of aftercare is, quote, affordable for every owner. So if you are passionate about having your horse cremated, it's very possible that that's not affordable for you. But if you're open to other options, there are third-party burials, aftercare, that could be more cost-effective.
Exactly. And it's also important to note that some of the aftercare companies have specifics about how a horse has been euthanized. And this is particularly true for rendering services and some of the public burial services. So we really recommend that owners who are looking to try to price out options for aftercare of the body once the horse is euthanized, you should call these services ahead of time and ask what euthanasia process they accept. Lidocaine euthanasia is a new upcoming type, and that is more amenable to a horse being buried in a lot of areas. So it's a good discussion to have with your veterinarian as well. Further, information about disposal options is not easily accessible. And that was very apparent while we were doing this research, that it's even hard just to find companies. A lot of stuff is someone knows a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy, and then you get that phone number and have to call them and ask for a price. So we're working on fixing that, and we've made our entire database of disposal options available publicly at the United Horse Coalition website, and we'll link to it in the show notes.
So again, I know this is an unpleasant conversation, but our hope is to help you think proactively about what your plan is. If you have an older horse or a horse with some challenges and you need to think about what you want to do, the big takeaway from this is we feel that with enough industry buy-in and support from grant makers, that there are better opportunities to support owners that are unable to afford euthanizing their horses.
And you can read both the full Association Welfare Impact Report and the Equine Industry Euthanasia and Disposal Cost Report, and make sure to see the link to all the disposal options at the United Horse Coalition website.
And I'm just going to close by saying we've been criticized about the fact that we use the word affordable, and we thought affordable was $500 to have a horse euthanized. And I have to tell you guys, I had to put down a beloved 14-year-old dog recently. And I have to say, I spent almost that to put down the dog and have him cremated. And so $500 to put down a horse and have it disposed of is not absolutely out of the imagination. It's the right word, I guess I could say, Emily, for lack of a better description.
Yes, definitely. And having experience with this at the rescue I worked at that ran a crematorium, cremation prices are usually by the pound because of the fuel. So there's a lot of factors that go into the cost of euthanasia and disposal. So part of moving on from the pilot study is trying to understand what else we need to study and looking at factors of what impacts pricing is the next step for us, I think.
Okay, so I'm going to close with a positive note because I love to do that. So if you have questions about this, go to our website, check out what we've put together, and email us, info@horsecouncil.org. Tell us what your questions are. Tell us what your concerns or issues are, and we'll do some more due diligence. We've been so fortunate to use some interns to do some of this research. So thank you for joining us today. We will provide more numbers and links in our show notes. We invite you to support our beloved equine industry and join the American Horse Council. Earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter, which shares the latest in all our legislative happenings, federal, state, and as well as information about that horse owners like you should know. And we have tons of discount benefits, folks. So join and take advantage of those things.
And you can follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn. And you can also subscribe to this podcast's RSS feed. You can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
And as we like to say, we are #HereForHorses.